Mini episode 1703 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1703. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris coming at you. And we are here today for our 2023-2024 NCAA Bowl Season Review. And again, have with us here on the show the gentleman that we like to bring on just about any of the time that we're talking college football, from our Sports Central, our great friend, Fran Stutchberry, who's been coming on the show for many years. And Fran did pretty well in his own bowl pool for this past season. So going to talk about that and everything that went on through the national championship game. Fran, real pleasure to have you back on the show, my friend. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, happy to be here. I won my bowl pool about 15 games ahead. I ended up having Washington and Michigan in the semifinals. Then I was at Michigan in the finals, and then we had a tiebreaker where I had 49 points at the poll, the other guy had 56, the total was 47, and I won the most meaningless bowl pool I ever won in my life, and we'll explain why during this podcast.
That is amazing. Well, as somebody who I had UConn in my NCAA pool last year, and somehow or another missed even a tiebreaker for fourth place because of some janky rules, I can only say that I am very jealous of you that picking the most accurate way actually ended up benefiting you, as it didn't benefit me in my NCAA pool somehow or another. But anyways, yeah, there was a lot of action from start to finish. I was chagrined to see that while my Ohio Bobcats kicked off the bowl season with the Myrtle Beach Bowl in winning fashion over Georgia Southern, according to Wikipedia, only 8,059 people in attendance for that game. And so that can't possibly count as one of the highlights of the bowl season, even if in my jaded personal opinion it would be. But again, moving through some of the other bowl games, moving up towards January 1st and beyond.
One thing I didn't want to mention is that game, the Toaster Bowl, which was supposed to be Bahamas. Well, remember, that was one of my games that probably got me on top, where West Kentucky was down 28 points, and they came back and won the game. That's the game that probably won me the pool, which is kind of crazy, which they were so far behind in that game, and they ended up winning that game, which won me that.
Well, it's safe to say that that game mattered to you more than it mattered to most people, because the attendance for it apparently was 56-32, if you believe Wikipedia. But, that's not always the measure of the game. And, yes, that was an exciting game, to be sure, going to OT there. But as we move through going up to January 1st, what were some of the more noteworthy games, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, the Air Force Bowl, which James Madison against Air Force, it's funny because, I made a post on Facebook. I mean, Air Force is struggling, but you never doubt Air Force in bowl games. I mean, going back to I don't know if you remember this bowl game. I do. Back in 1990, where Ohio State played Air Force in the bowl game, and Air Force was 17-point underdogs, and Ohio State, I think Air Force won the game 23-3, so they really dominated the whole entire game. Where at that age, Rick, I was 6 years old. I saw a triple option attack, and I was like mesmerized by a triple option. Like, what the hell is this? But it was just one of the fun memories. Where it's funny when you get exposed to a younger age, you tend to want to pick that way when you grow up. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
A game like that.
Well, Fran, of course, living in the state of Ohio, of course I remember that game, and that was early in the troubled tenure of John Cooper at Ohio State. And again, you could never have believed at that point in time that John Cooper, if somebody was to tell you in 1990 he will have a tremendous record of futility against Michigan but still last until 2000, nobody would have believed it. But a different day and age based on the way that we get rid of coaches these days here. But moving through the bowl season, again, there were we talked about it coming in, some of the games that were going to be a little bit more interesting to see. One of them I know that we flagged was the Holiday Bowl. That, again, USC against number 15 Louisville. USC with the start of a new chapter at quarterback, but nonetheless a successful one, winning 42-28.
Well, that game I had the other way because everyone thought, with USC left. I mean, that's what made the game, bowl games off of the pick. The transport killed picking bowl games. It was random guessing. It was basically, who wanted to get in, who wanted it more. It was embarrassing. It was a situation where if you look based on who was leading USC, you would never expect that performance. So that was like one of those different performances like that. It shocked me, but, did you really shock me?
Well, yeah, and that's where, and again, looking ahead to next year, a lot of teams were doing that. I know that Tennessee trying to get a good bounce into next year. My Vols, a big one, 35-0 over Iowa in the Citrus Bowl on New Year's Day, and that was one where...
That game was an easy basket. And some teams use these bowl games from the minute for next season, and that's a Tennessee game where next season they're going to be going to Charlotte to play Miami NC State, and that's going to be a great game I'm going to be at. So that'll be one of the best opening week games that I'm going to be there at. Rick, another game that flies really under the wire is that game that actually people can watch on TV, the Barstool Network on CW, the Arizona-Wyoming game where, Toledo-Wyoming, where Craig Bowles last game, and unlike Coach K, he ended up with a victory. So, it was different. That's why that was the only game I had in my bowl pool, which helped put me on top.
Yeah. That was a pretty tight game throughout. One of the blue blood programs in the country here. Although, again, as I said a minute ago here, unlike a day and age where John Cooper could go 10 years and keep his job at Ohio State, Dabo Swinney not in any immediate danger at Clemson, but if we're going to continue to regard them as a top-tier program, clock's ticking on them here. The fact that they were playing on December 28th in the Gator Bowl tells you all you need to know about their season. But when you talk about teams looking ahead to next year and trying to prove something, hanging on 38-35 over a very game Kentucky team.
Wow, so they held on, they survived. That was interesting. One game we have to talk about is that Pop-Tarts Bowl, which the hype was crazy. I almost bought Pop-Tarts when I went grocery shopping. The Pop-Tarts mascot, anything was, it made like over like, so much advertising, like $12 million, it's almost to the point where I think these bowl games are going to try to come up with the most creative sponsor to entice people to watch, and the whole entire false wrestling propaganda that a live mascot was going to eat during the presentation, where it ended up being like a bait switch, where it's just mascot, hey, I'm high, and waves and highs, and it turns to a regular edible mascot, Pop-Tart. So that was kind of funny, where they basically enticed people to watch, and then it wasn't what we expected.
Well, nevertheless, the amount of attention that it got, whether it be on social media or overall, I think you're actually right. I mean, I have no idea what the name of the previous bowl game would have been in Orlando there at Camping World Stadium. I know they always played one before the New Year's Day Citrus Bowl, but I don't remember what the old name used to be. And I guess that's the point. I couldn't have told you what it was because it wasn't memorable enough. And that's why I think you're absolutely right about this one here. We're coming into a day and age where this is going to be imitated, and this is going to be a chance for brands to basically kind of jump off and get their name out in front of the American public here. So I think you're looking at my prediction, if I was going to make one, would be that you're going to have brands even far less famous than Pop-Tarts in the years to come that are going to try and exploit an opportunity like this and make their brand go viral.
Well, who's selling like the new Mayo Bowl with mayonnaise? You know, like the College Bowl with eggnog. All these, the Cheez-It Bowl with the Cheez-Its, the potato bowl with the dumped French fries. And I know everybody wants to ask sort of signature thing to people to share viral on Instagram, right? So.
Well, sure, but the thing is, everything you just mentioned, like these things happen, but like nothing really grabs the mainstream the way that this one did. And this is a thing where, you know, I guarantee you, ad agencies all over this country are probably looking at this and wondering how they can imitate it for the years to come. So, yes, I'm very glad that you thought to mention that, because that is definitely one of the high points of the bowl season, which, again...
Well, I will say one thing, Rick. At least it was an entertaining game. It wasn't like it was a bad game to watch. It would have been less appealing, but at least it was an entertaining game start to finish, which, you know, thank God it was. Otherwise, it may have taken away from the branding. So.
Well, yeah, exactly. And that's where, again, the fact that we've just spent a good chunk of the last several minutes talking about Pop-Tarts, for those that are bah humbug about the bowls, and I certainly have a number of my friends and contributors to this show that are bah humbug and don't share my appreciation for it, you know, they would be saying, well, that's an indictment on the whole bowl system that you just spent a better part of the last 5 minutes talking about Pop-Tarts. But I would say to people like that, my friends included, need to lighten up, because this is part of the spectacle of this thing here. And you're going to see this in the next couple of years. And, you know, it's going to be very interesting. The funny thing is, I think there's going to be some very memorable swings and misses. I think somebody out there, some brand, is going to try something similar to this. They're going to fall straight on their butt, and we're all going to laugh when we see it.
Well, by the way, Rick, I just got an email from Pop-Tarts. They want to advertise at the FDH Lounge. They're so impressed with our branding of Pop-Tarts. I'm sure you wouldn't mind that. I'm sure you wouldn't mind a little bit of money and a little bit of food, too.
Yeah, they're
you want sponsorship, you want both. Come on.
Their money's good with...
And,
yeah.
You can share with charity co-workers and your... And your HOAs,
the HOA, kayfabe. But I will say, as far as that goes, their money's good with me, but every sample that they end up sending me, I'd have to give away because of having celiac disease. I can't eat gluten. So those around me would benefit greatly from my inability to eat Pop-Tarts. So, you know, on and on it goes here with the different bowl sponsors and the things that they might be likely to do in the years to come. And
let's move on to the New York Six games. We'll
yeah, I was just about to say, it's the sunset of the bowl games as we knew them in this sense. Every one of these New Year's Six bowl games will be incorporated into the playoffs henceforth. You will be seeing four of them over the course of New Year's Eve and New Year's, and then the next ones will be the semifinals a week or so after that. And again, getting marginalized to weeknights, just like the national championship game has been, because the NFL has colonized weekends all the way through April, it seems like, as far as the way they've extended their season. So the last of these games as we knew them, it started on a very low note with two very primitive offenses, Missouri and Ohio State. Missouri taking it 14-3 in the Cotton Bowl. And when you talk about games decimated by the transfer portal, that one stands right there as a very good example, albeit I don't want to make that point too strongly on Ohio State's behalf, lest it sound like I am alibiing for them, because the coaching, the execution, everything was putrid. Yeah, they didn't have a lot of their top guys, but Ryan Day deserves all the crap he got after that embarrassing performance. That reminded you of Cooper against Air Force, as we said before.
Well, the thing is, Rick, I mean, I think Missouri in that pool, which another game that got to be on top. Some people probably, you know, didn't even think about it. Some people were dumb enough to even not even consider this transport. So some people doing these pools don't even look at that. They look at the matchups and not do the research. So. As they say, Rick, if you don't do your research, you snooze, you lose. But that was like a, I mean, come on, I had to pick Missouri based on all the transfers. I mean, and the thing is, I mean, honestly, come on, that was game where if they won that game, that would shock the bleep out of me.
Yeah, I get that. Interestingly enough, the Peach Bowl in Atlanta, this is something where you didn't hear a whole heck of a lot about it vis-a-vis SEC Big Ten partisanship. You tended to hear more about that as related to the Rose Bowl, which we'll talk about a little later with Michigan and Alabama. Obviously, that was a higher profile one. But Ole Miss and Penn State, probably at this moment in time, at approximately the same level in their different conferences. So that's what made it really kind of a litmus test right there. And Ole Miss didn't have a whole lot of problems winning this game, 38-25. As a Tennessee fan, I'm a Lane Kiffin loather from way back, but... I think he's got this program ahead of where Penn State is in the Big Ten.
Well, Well, I think Ole Miss might go in next season a top 10 team. I think they'll be one of the 12 teams in the playoff next year. I mean, that's the trajectory they're at, the recruiting, the talent they're at. I mean, they're a team that's going to be good for a long time. As far as Penn State's concerned, I'll see what I believe in. I mean, I'm just, you know, I think with the other teams coming into the Big Ten with Washington, Oregon, you know, I mean, they'll get opportunities for the playoff before Penn State does. As Penn State goes, hasta la vista, baby.
Yeah, they're just not. They're one of those teams where it's like these days, if it's like, oh my God, Penn State is ninth in the polls, it's only ever like, well, somebody's got to be. There's not really anybody that impressive at the end of the, you know, the top 10 and then beginning of the next 10 in the standings like that. That's why Penn State, anytime they're in there, they really are. No offense, no pun intended, I should say, a paper tiger here, not a Nittany Lion, to be sure, in any sense of the word. The next one up here, the Orange Bowl, Georgia and Florida State, 63-3. It will be the all-time example of everything with the transfer portal. Having said that, let's not lay it all at the feet of that, because we saw how bad Florida State looked offensively in their last couple of games. We both said it was justifiable they didn't make the playoff. And let's not pretend that Georgia wouldn't have whomped them no matter what, even if all the other guys hadn't gone into the transfer portal, as long as FSU was playing with backup quarterbacks here. It might not have been 63-3, but it would have been ugly nonetheless.
Well, look, I don't know where you stand on sports gambling, but I was at the Olive Garden having a good meal with Francine and Master, and if sports gambling was legal at that point, I would have placed a nice big bet that would have paid for my dinner. I mean, I don't know if you... I don't think you're a P-Rose at gambling, but I'm willing to bet a little bit to make a... I'm not going to... Believe me, I don't want to get... You know, I'm not one of these like, big-time gambling. I just want to bet a little bit where I can... You know, if I win, that pays for a nice dinner.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe I'll double down and get another nice dinner. But not. But at this point, Rick, Michael, I'm eating... No drinks, sorry.
Yeah, and that's one of those things where, I mean, that line should have been bigger than 2 touchdowns going in, regardless of the transfer portal, but that was one of those things where, and we should never feel sorry for Las Vegas or other bookies, but it's a thing of where they couldn't make the line bigger than it was because of the public perception. Let us never forget, they're trying to get equilibrium on these games. And if you push it too far, with the line being up, people are going to jump on Florida State with both feet, and they're not going to be able to get equilibrium on it. So it's a thing where sometimes a team is laying enough points like that, it's going to scare off a lot of people. It scares off a lot of the smarts, but that line isn't big enough. And we knew that, like I said, even before the transfer portal thing, that just locked it for Georgia. But let's not pretend... Okay, they beat them by 60, but they would have beat them by 30 even if Florida State had all their guys. Georgia came out dressed to kill, basically, because as I pointed out when we did our pre-bowl season special, Georgia's the team that really arguably got screwed from the bowl consideration here. And we'll talk about that subsequently here as far as the teams that made it. As far as the Fiesta Bowl goes, again, let's not pretend everybody didn't see this coming in, that Oregon was just going to squash Liberty. But this deal, and we're going to see it again next year in the playoff, there will be one of these 5 non-power conference teams that's going to make the playoff. And again, this Liberty team might have been a little bit weaker than some of the teams that made it in the past couple of years. Certainly a lot weaker than the Cincinnati team that actually made it to the national semifinals a couple of years back. But again, this was a final score that we knew was going to be something like this coming in. And Dan Lanning wasn't going to show any mercy based on what he did to Colorado, among other teams, earlier in the season.
Rick, let's give something a shock prayer where I didn't pass out. A player that's going to enter the NFL draft actually play in the game, Bo Nix. He didn't want to risk entry. He wanted to finish it out. And what's going on here? I mean, how is this possible? Rick? A meaningless game that he still wanted to play. How is this possible? Rick, maybe you could be a host of Unsolved Mysteries on this.
Well, I will say this. I don't want to be cynical and take any credit away from Bo Nix because he deserves it, but I will say this. It's one of those things where as long as he had a good sense that he was going to stay healthy, and again, freak injuries can happen, but you're looking at a guy who... in his mind, he was probably thinking my draft stock can only go up, because he's not slotted among the top three quarterbacks in this draft at this point here. I'm sure he's wanted to move up the draft boards. So this was an opportunity to go out there, lay the smack down on Liberty. And again, as long as he stayed healthy, which he did, it was bound to be a good gamble on his part. I don't know that it's going to move the needle any, but, you know, it was a smart move for him to do. And like I said, I don't want to say that to be cynical and take any credit away from him, because, as you said, he deserves credit. Most guys in his spot don't do that anymore.
Well, also keep in mind, Rick, I mean, this guy has a history of not getting injured, so look how many games he played. So, I mean, maybe the odds were in his favor.
Yeah,
And that Oregon offense where nobody ever gets touched, come on.
Well, that's true. That's true.
It's more like a scrimmage game where he gets rid of the ball so quickly. He's never running with the football. So.
Yes. So those are very good points, and I don't know if it'll benefit him in the draft any. We shall see. A quarterback that did benefit himself in the draft based on the fact that he is coming out, J.J. McCarthy, and that started in the Rose Bowl. This is a game where, again, beating Alabama 27-20 in overtime. Again, Michigan with very putrid special teams play, and for as much as, again, they were getting to the quarterback a good chunk of the game, especially in the first half, this is a thing where Michigan really, really, really almost paid the price for playing with their food here, because it was a game where, again, in the first half, if you were an anti-Michigan partisan, as I was, and I was watching at my dad's watch party here with a bunch of fellow Ohio State folks. In that case, I think folks, aside from me, who are all Ohio State alums, grim looks on our faces, but Alabama was still hanging around. And again, that was a thing where, testament to Nick Saban's coaching, that despite the fact the way that his offensive line was getting pushed around, Alabama stuck around and almost won that game, which was kind of remarkable. That would have been a big choke job on Michigan's part if they hadn't finished him off.
Yeah, well, a big play was that fourth down conversion. I mean, when they had that ball, to get to the game tied up. I think Alabama ran a gas in all time. That's the way it looked, Rick.
Yeah, I think they did.
At least these semifinal games made the games watchable, because, 95% of those ball games were unwatchable. So at least the final semifinal games I'll be able to watch were must-see TV.
They were, and everybody said coming in that these looked like the most competitive games, pairs of games that we were going to have as far as the national semifinals go. Because a lot of years you get games where, and a lot of times, ironically, it involved Alabama. When Alabama played Washington the previous time the Huskies had been in, I remember that there was a sense that the game may not necessarily be that competitive, and it wasn't. It wasn't competitive when Alabama beat Michigan State after the 2015 season. That's the one that pretty much ended the whole thing of, we're going to play it on New Year's Eve from now on when it's not on New Year's Day. Yeah, that ended in a thud when everybody tuned out of Michigan State getting smashed. And Alabama playing Cincinnati a couple of years back. Again, not a rout, but that was a game going in where people doubted that it might be that competitive. So generally speaking, people have been able to kind of see in some of these years, not necessarily all the time, but like when Alabama, I think they played Notre Dame a couple of years back, people had a sense that it might not be that competitive, and it wasn't. So people said going in this year these would be competitive games, and they were.
Well, at least both were. I mean, everyone thought this game was going to be great. At least the second game was just good to a degree. So.
It was. You had Washington and Texas, and that was a game where, again, it really kept going back and forth. And it was one of those things where you look at it and, again, really sort of shades of the way that Justin Fields looked a couple of years ago in the semifinals against Clemson. That was a game that was a real breakout for him and a real chance to prove himself. And the funny thing is, I would say, in a losing effort, the same thing C.J. Stroud did a year ago against Georgia. This was a game where Michael Penix had heard down the stretch a lot about how the second half of his season hadn't been as good as the first half of his season. By the way, we'll come back to that theme subsequently. But again, in this game, he looked all world, and he had some folks, myself included, fooled into thinking he'd be able to get it done the next week as well.
Well, the thing is, I think he might be a top 10 pick. I mean, the draft, I think, or you know, top 15 pick, depending on what teams are going to want a quarterback in this draft. That could be a discussion for a show down the road. But I mean, he played well. And as far as Texas, I'm not surprised he lost. I just can't see Texas. It's almost to a point where when I'm picking games, Rick, prove to me first. And then I'll pick you going forward. I didn't think Texas was going to win a big game. And when they go to the SEC next year, Rick, they're not going to win as much. I'm sorry, they're not going to be a 12-team playoff. Steve Sarkisian, your win totals get lower and lower. I mean, Rick, do you think Texas is going to be able to compete to a level with some of these powerhouse SEC teams? I think no way.
I don't think they're going to be on the level, at least right off the bat, of Alabama and Georgia. I think they'll be able. Yeah, and LSU I'd probably put in front of them. Now, I mean, if we're talking the aforementioned Mississippi Rebels, I think they can hang with them. I think they can hang with some of the other teams in there. I as much as I hate to say it as a Tennessee fan, I probably slot them a little ahead of Tennessee right now.
When we do our college football bowl, I mean our preview, we'll have to share the SEC schedule they have, and we can do our win or loss prediction. That'll
yeah,
because that'll be fun. Just that we'll break it down and we'll see what they're going to win, what they're going to lose, because we know these teams better than anybody else. That'll be a fun thing to do.
That's true.
And look what's going on. I mean, Quentin Ewers is staying. Arch Manning's going to hold the clipboard again. He's making a port to NIL. What's that? I mean, by the time he gets to play, come on, that's another point to mention. I mean,
right.
I mean, I'm surprised the Manning family has gotten his kid to transfer to a school to start. So that's it's funny that the Manning family, we'll keep you at home, we'll keep you on home for the year. So that's the fun story to talk about.
Yeah, it will be. And again, the irony of this geography wise, you're talking about Texas and what they have to prove in big games. Much like Dallas in the NFL, so both teams playing down to their reputations in big games there. But Texas, again, this probably goes without saying, on about the same level as Oklahoma coming into the SEC next year, but we will be seeing how all of that plays out. By the way...
One thing we have to mention in the circle, which I had to share with you on Facebook, apparently ESPN had apologized for a woman having her breast exposed, first of all, that's their own. That doesn't surprise me. So,
yeah.
But still, I'm like, but the fact is, why do you even mention it? Just bury it.
Well, that's true. And it's a thing where, at least unlike the Super Bowl with Janet Jackson, you're not looking at the FEC being involved here, because, again, you've got a situation where it is the it being cable, it's not the same situation. It's not the same regulations.
And
but again,
here's the funny story. I guarantee you, when that got mentioned, every kid went on YouTube to see what the hell they're talking about.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure they were looking for it there. And
that kid's like, ooh, I get to see something I shouldn't see.
Well, yeah, and the YouTube monitors there were probably working overtime.
It wasn't much fading at all anyway, so you weren't really seeing it anyway. So
yeah,
so
well,
it wasn't as big as a deal as the newspaper made out to be. So
exactly.
It's almost like you could have blinked and you wouldn't notice anything. You know.
Well, yeah, and that's how the Janet Jackson thing was: blink and you miss it. But looking at which, by the way, how's this for a segue? I consider myself the king of segues. That being something that happened in, I think, 2004 at NRG Stadium in Houston, Texas, where the national championship game was this year with Michigan and Washington. How about that, man? How about that? I can flip on a dime to talking about these things. Two undefeated teams coming in, 14-0, Michigan and Washington, numbers 1 and 2 in the country. And again, throw out everything I thought about Penix keeping it going and the Washington offense dictating terms to Michigan. Because again, it just was a matter of, again, first and foremost, Washington not being able to keep up, because Michigan was consistently being able to pound the ball and break off big plays. The funny thing is, I'll draw some parallels to a game that would happen in that stadium not long thereafter, because somewhat reminiscent of when the Browns came into that stadium and played the Texans. because, again, it was a matter of the Browns trying to keep up, and then Joe Flacco starts pressing, starts making turnovers. In the case of Penix, I don't know that it was necessarily too many embarrassing plays like the pick sixes that Flacco had, but his accuracy just, like, wasn't there. There were, like, a lot of throws where it was like, dude, this is the biggest game of your life, and you're an ostensibly great quarterback. So Washington, again, when the press started to come to them, they folded under the pressure of it, and that was how Michigan was able to pull away.
Well, Rick, I'll be honest with you. What happened was, when the Michigan now to a big start, I'm like, I thought this game was going to be a massacre, and I was gonna, everyone was going to tune out. So thankfully, you know, Washington hung in there enough where at least it was close for a little while. And then I had a fun thing where I'm saying to myself, I have this point total to watch. So I'm like, ooh, this sounds interesting. And then I'm like, so why is Michigan get that late score at the end of the game? Like, oh, I think I'm going to actually win this pool. win my sports college ball pool. And I did. So I was like, oh, great. I'm like, when they got the interception, they got ran down close to a score. I'm like, oh, great. So I didn't know at the time what the other guy had point total wise. Like, but I felt like this is going to get you over the edge, and it did. So.
Yeah. And, you know, in looking at it here, it was one of these things. We have not talked much subsequently about the whole merry-go-round with the coaches and everything like that. We will get to, I guess, to use the word accurately, we will get to that subsequently, you and I, in a segment coming up shortly here. We're going to wait to see how it goes at Michigan with the expected in many quarters departure of Jim Harbaugh. But, again, a national championship game. It would be interesting to go back in history and see how many times it was the last game coached by both coaches at the different schools. DeBoer, of course, now moving on to Alabama after the game. Of course, Michigan loves to point out that they beat both Washington and Alabama in the playoffs this year, or at least they did until it gets vacated in the years to come by the NCAA. Stay tuned for that development. So we'll be monitoring and seeing what happens with the coaches, but it was a thing where, again, Michigan was, for a good part of the season, I think a lot of people, myself included, considered them behind the sort of 1A team behind Georgia, because you had to give the nod to Georgia as long as they stayed undefeated since 2021. But the minute that Georgia went down, relatively surprisingly, I would say, in the SEC championship game, Michigan then gets thrust to the forefront. I didn't think Washington was too far behind them, but in the end, I was wrong.
Well, seriously, it seemed like dancing. Everyone did everything they could to hold down Michigan with suspensions. They did everything they could to crippleize them. And they became like the team, like, I wish Michigan more and more because I wanted these people to prove people wrong. Come on, you think you can take us down? I mean, I was on the Ric Flair, so like, woo! But, saying, like, come on, let's, you know, I mean, the thing is, it's not that Facebook is the most toxic thing on this planet. Still has a chance people say Michigan cheated. And I'm tired of this nonsense. I was like, people have such anger and hatred. I mean, go see a therapist. Go see some psych meds, please. I mean, if you have nothing nice to say, don't say anything at all. Anger and hate people saying on Facebook is just ridiculous. I'm like, there's no such thing as a cheat. Everybody does that with the science scandals. People are just such crybabies. And it's like, come on. It's like, you don't get your way, you cry. I'm like, enough. That's my rant of the day, so.
Boy, oh boy, Fran, come up to Ohio and make that statement to people. That would not go over very well.
But, yeah, well, then again, Michigan. But then again, when Michigan comes there, you'll put me in the Michigan uniform and I'll get killed. So.
Pretty much would. You know, it was, an interesting end to the season. And immediately.
And now with the 12-team playoff, Ryan's day job gets saved because if it was only a 14-team playoff, if he kept on losing to Michigan, his job was going to go bye-bye, Rick. No offense.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. And it should if he can't start to beat Michigan. It will be interesting to see how many coaching careers get extended by the whole thing of like, oh, well, we made the playoffs at least. And my guess is it's going to happen at the more marginal schools that at the periphery, the pretenders to being big time at this point, like Penn State, and I'm trying to think of who else would qualify in that regard. Probably North Carolina.
The only thing that sucks is that these college championship games, for most of the majority of them, the loser of the team is going to be getting a playoff spot. There's going to be very few of these these conference games where it's win and you get in.
Well, absolutely.
You know, and that's going to be, that final of the week is going to be less appealing. The games that are going to be more appealing to you, the ones that are, you win and you get into the final. Otherwise, like, why do I want to watch this nonsense?
Well, here's the thing, is the only thing that's going to matter is if you win, you get a bye. But, again, if you're the runner-up in one of these conferences, because thankfully, they're doing away, for the most part, in these conferences with the whole, you know, divisional crap. Like in the Big Ten, we talked about this previously, where some crappy team like Iowa was automatically going to be in the conference championship game. No. Now, from now until the end of time, it's going to be some grouping of USC, Oregon, Washington, Ohio State, and Michigan. That's it. Two of those five, they're going to play for it. Winner's going to be in the top four and get a bye. Loser is going to be five or six or seven in the polls. And one or two other teams will also make it there. But that's the thing. If you're five in the polls, you're going to end up getting next year's version of Liberty that comes in. Probably a better team than this year's version of Liberty, but still. 5 versus 12 is a bye week, basically. It's a fifth bye, unless somebody gets hurt. Basically, the only stakes in an Ohio State-Michigan game from now on are going to be, and when they play again in the conference championship game, it's going to be, oh, we got to play another game and risk guys getting hurt in the December cold of the Midwest. That could happen.
One funny thing, Rick, speaking of Liberty, they play their home opener against a college I do security work out to. So I'm like, I'm not saying I'm going to make the drive to the game, but if I have friends, you know, at the school or people that are going to the game, I may go to Liberty for a Campbell game. Kicks. If I have to make the drive and just for kicks, I mean, they may get massacred, but yeah, that'd be fun.
So, oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just fun to know how, see, Rick, you can segue too. I can segue just as you can.
Yeah. Well, and again, so, I'm going to miss this landscape. I'm going to miss the four-team playoff. I'm going to miss the SEC on CBS. I'm going to miss a lot of things like this. And, Nick Saban is going to miss the SEC on CBS so much that he's leaving with it. He will never coach a game during the SEC, ABC, ESPN exclusivity contract. So,
it would shock me he's an analyst on it. That's my prediction. I think he's going to be in the studio talking to Rick. You heard me first.
Well, yeah, he's going to be, and I think it's going to bring back.
So, you know, I think CBS or SEC, he's going to be doing it. You know, like, what happens? So.
Well, it's going to bring back memories of Bill Walsh when he was at NBC. Bill Walsh at least had a personality, but he was still, God forbid me saying this, but he was a flop. And I think Saban's going to be also, since he has no personality, and TV tends to demand you having a personality. But we will see how it plays out. But, again, always a pleasure to get on here and talk football with you, Fran Stutchberry. And I will say that, again, we're going to reconvene in the near future and sum up what's going on with the coaching situation. I look forward to that.
Well, thanks, Rick. I have to say, this is the first time at the NFL history we did a bowl game recap. Something I've been trying to be able to do with you. And I'm glad I did it. We had fun talking about things. I won my bowl pool. So, it was just nice to have a – We made it sound a lot better than it was. We made this bowl season more. We know how to sell things.
We talk
about the positives and we less on the negatives. That's how you get more sponsors next year. You know?
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Pop Tarts, folks, ring me up. I'll take your money. But in the meantime,
and also, no mayo. I don't like mayonnaise.
Oh, I hate mayo too. I'm glad to hear you say that because few people agree with me, but I loathe mayo. So, yeah.
And if Gatorade wants to get on board, by all means, I'll take as much Gatorade as I can.
Absolutely. I tend to go Gatorade Zero, but yeah, I'll drink any kind, basically. So, again, always a pleasure, Fran. Thank you so much, and thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1703.